Hi everyone and warm welcome to the FiberPod, episode number 10. This episode is recorded in the end of February in Hudiksvall. It's a fantastic day outside. It's a clear blue sky, minus 10 degrees and a lot of snow. So just be outdoor or look out through the window gives extremely a lot of energy. I'm extremely glad to present my guest today. It's Åsa Claesson from RISE. RISE is described as Sweden's research institute and innovation partner. Welcome, Åsa.
Thank you. Really happy to be here.
Good to see you. I said in the beginning that I get so much energy of just being outdoor this wonderful day. What do you say about that? You walked here, or... Almost.
Well, our facility is just across the street, really. So yeah, it was a nice walk.
Great. And you feel now the spring is coming.
All soon. Let's enjoy the snow for a few more weeks.
Yeah. So we can share that with the listeners. To live in Sweden, it's almost to if you have been sick and then you are going back to be healthy again. That was happened every spring.
True.
When we leave the darkness behind us and go into the light period. So RISE, can you just tell, a lot of our listeners or followers, they are not from Sweden, so I don't expect that they know what RISE is. Can you please say a few words about RISE?
Yes, absolutely. So RISE stands for Research Institutes of Sweden. We are the fourth largest institute of our kind in Europe, so fairly large. We have labs and facilities and offices around Sweden and in a few countries in Europe. Representations in Brussels and the US as well. We're active really in all areas. We're almost 3,000 people. Me specifically are in the smart hardware activities and even more specifically in fiber optics. So fiber optics and specialty fibers is my expertise, although RISE is much broader, obviously. And in fiber optics, most of what we do at RISE is regarding fiber optic sensing, so not so much telecoms. So we have we work both on the fiber side, the specialty fiber side, making fibers, developing fibers, and we're looking at the applications where we apply the fibers for mainly sensor use in industrial applications or medical or other applications.
Cool. And you support not only Swedish companies, but any company who wants your support, or is it only Swedish companies?
No, absolutely. Our partners are worldwide.
Mm. Great. And I know that you have also supported a few of Hexatronic companies during the years.
Absolutely. Yes. Hexatronic is a very good partner of ours.
Great. We're also neighbors here in Hudiksvall, which is extremely fantastic that this small city in Sweden has this, huge experience in this field.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. There's a lot of fiber expertise here.
And you mentioned also fiber sensors, fiber sensing. We will discuss that in another episode because it's such a big subject. And also I think that what we are about to cover today will be enough. I think so. And what will be covered today is actually that I want to talk with Åsa, since you are so experienced and probably one of the best in Sweden in fiber itself. So today we shall only discuss the fiber. So if we go back to the really basics, and this should probably have been in the first episode of the Fiber Pod too, because not all our listeners are actually fiber experts. So I just wanted to start... ask you about, how shall I say, you need to crawl before you walk. So that is for the listeners need to understand this. How does a fiber work?
Yeah, that's a really good fundamental question. So then we need to talk a little bit about waveguiding. So that's the key principle that's used in fibers. So if you would launch light into just a solid stream of water or any material, let's say water, you'll see the light will follow the water, even if the water stream would bend a little bit. And that's because the optical refractive index of the water is higher than that of the air surrounding the water. And that refractive index differences creates this waveguide. And the same principle is used in optical fibers. So the fiber is really just an optical waveguide made in glass or polymers, but in our case, glass. Mm. So you have the core of the fiber that carries the light, like the water, yeah. And the surrounding glass acts like the air. It forces the light to stay in the core. That's basically a waveguide. That's what the fiber is.
Is that easy?
It is that easy.
And then you, but since you are always transmitting light, you have always, still at least, since we don't have any, or maybe you know that, we don't have any fiber optic processors yet. So we need to convert every time we shall transmit into a fiber, from electricity into light.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then also, I think that I actually got that question from a few times, that people who are not working with fiber expect that the fiber is actually, it's not solid. It's like a pipe, a tube. But you can confirm that it's completely solid.
Most fibers are completely solid. Yeah. Not all.
I know you should say that.
Not all, but yes. What we normally call a fiber is solid. So it has a solid core and a solid cladding around it.
When was this fiber optic technology developed or invented?
Yeah, so it's been a long process. So the waveguiding principle itself has been known for hundreds of years, I would say. It was used in water fountains or decorations and things like that for a long time. And then in the mid-1800s, there were solid waveguides, or solid light guides, they were called at that time, that was used for illumination. So I guess those were the first bulky fibers, if you want to call it that. In the 1880s, I think it was, there was actually demonstrations of light-carried telecoms or light-carried communications, where Graham Bell transmitted sound waves carried by lights. That was not really a waveguide in that case, was free space. But that was like the start of optical communication, perhaps. But it wasn't until 100 years later, in the 1980s, that the optical waveguides for telecom took off. And then the researchers were able to manufacture glass fibers with low optical loss. And the fibers really became interesting for carrying information in that case. And soon thereafter, they developed the single mode fibers. And then came the erbium-doped fibers that were able to amplify the light, to mitigate the loss. And those were the two, so the low loss, the single mode, and the erbium-doped. Those were the three things in optical fibers that made telecom, I would say.
Yeah, okay.
So that was the 1880s and the decades following that.
Mm. And you mentioned the single mode fibers. So I mean, the two most common fiber types, it's the multimode one and the single mode one.
Yeah.
And just for anyone who is not working with this on a daily basis, what's the difference between these two ones?
Yeah, that's a good question. Those are two standard types really used in communications. So the single mode fiber, it carries one mode only. You have very good control over that mode. It transmits with very low loss. Compared to multimode, you use more expensive components around it, electrical components, but you can carry the light for long distances. So all submarine cables, for example, they have these fibers inside them.
Hmm.
If you're talking about the short distances, then you can go to multimode fibers. They can carry many, many modes, as you hear from the name. You have less control of the light, really, if you want to do fancy things, but it's cheaper components also very good transmission and very, very good data performance.
So if you want to simplify this a lot, just for the different use cases, probably then the multimode is more indoor, short distance, and then it's the single mode ones who is for the main high performance and longer distances.
Very good.
Shall we also, I mean, you also touched EDFA, the erbium doped fiber amplifiers. I think that's probably not anyone who knows what's that. Even for you, it's a commodity. But can you just explain a bit, what is an EDFA?
Yes. So even though the fiber itself has very low optical attenuation, it is not it's not zero loss. So after a certain distance, the power of the light goes down so much. So you either need to cut and repeat it electrically, the signal, or you need to amplify it in some way. And these erbium-doped fibers, they are standard fibers, but in the core, it also has erbium ions. You can use that as an amplifier for the light. So the light can continue along the same fiber, but you pump it up in these, so you increase the energy of the pulse in this amplifier.
So it's completely passive. You just the light passes through the EDFA, and it's getting stronger when it passed it.
Pretty much. I mean, you need to add something.
Exactly.
So what you do is you pump we call it pump. You pump the erbium ions up so that the light gets amplified in that sense. So there's a separate light source going into these adverts as well.
So you have this separate light source, and then you don't need to add any power cable or any other. You have this amplifier, so you can. This one could be, for example, in the C cable.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. So then now everyone knows EDFA is. It's a fantastic invention. If you look at almost every data transmission nowadays, it's based on fiber. Most of the networks, even fiber to the home nowadays. Why do you think that the fiber technology was the winning technology in this race instead of copper, for example?
There's really no other technology that we know of that can give the data capacity and the transmission speed and the quality that we need today over the lengths and the relatively low costs that the fiber can give.
Mm.
So there's no real competition, I think.
And I mean, if you, you in some cases you talk about that one single fiber could carry all the phone calls going on in the whole world at the same time in just one single fiber.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And have you calculated or what the maximum capacity is for one fiber?
I have not.
You have not. And of course, nowadays you can also talk about this wavelength multiplexing. Shall we touch that when you are in this field now? What is that? Can you describe that?
Well, it's really using. Well, the name says it. So it's multiplexing the signals that you have so that you can use different wavelengths to carry more light. So you can have one signal per wavelength, for example.
Mm.
So that instead of just using one wavelength, you have one signal. You can use maybe 10 or 20 or a number of wavelengths just multiply the signal capacity you have in your fibers.
And each of these wavelengths can then carry the same as you did for if you should have just one wavelength.
Yes, independent of each other.
Yeah, so then you can just multiple. If you have a channel with 40 different wavelengths, then you have the 40 times the capacity at once. In
absolutely,
the
yes.
That's amazing.
It is.
And then now we are really into this field here. I mean, now everyone understands the very basics of the fiber and some of the capacity and how we use it. But how do you produce? How do you make a fiber?
Yes. So first of all, we're only talking about silica-based fibers here today. There are other materials as well, but let's stick to the silica-based fibers, which is the telecom fibers.
Mm-hmm.
They are all silica-based. And as we talked about before, the fiber is basically just a core that carries the light and a cladding around it that forces the light to stay in the core. So if you look at the cross-section of a normal fiber, the core is normally in the middle, or it is in the middle in a normal fiber. And in a standard telecom fiber, the core is either small, around 10 micrometers in a single mode fiber, or larger, 50 or 62.5 micrometers in a multimode fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And this core needs to have a higher refractive index to create than the surrounding cladding to create this waveguide. So what you do is you add dopants to the core. Typically, germanium is what you use. And the surrounding cladding is undoped silica. So this refractive index difference will make up the waveguide. And the fiber is manufactured from glass rods that we call preforms. They can be large, decimeters in diameter and meters long, or as in the telecom fiber case. Or the preforms could be smaller in specialty fibers. Where I'm from, they are usually centimeters and perhaps a meter long.
Yeah.
And these preforms are then drawn into fibers. But first, when you make the preforms, so there you design your fiber. You use CVD processes to make these preforms. So you put a core of germanium doped glass in the center, and then you put undoped silica around it, using ultra pure gases, etc., to keep the losses very, very low in the fibers that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And these preforms will then be drawn to fiber, keeping the relative dimension that you have in the preform drawn down to fiber, to the core and the cladding. So. Basically, you design your fiber in the preform to be a larger version of your fiber.
Yeah.
So once you manufacture your preform, you pull it down to a fiber in the draw tower. the preform, it's pure silica, remember? So we need to heat it up to around 2,000 degrees to make the glass soft enough to be able to draw it down to a fiber. So you heat up the preform, you draw it down to a fiber. During the drawing, you put a polymeric coating onto the fiber. And this coating is what makes this glass thread survive over time and in application. And the fiber drawing from this preform down to fiber can be really fast. So in the telecom world, you usually draw at kilometers per minute. So really, really fast. And you get perhaps, well, you get hundreds of kilometers from each preform. In the specialty fiber world, maybe we draw at a few meters or a few hundred meters per minute.
Okay.
And obviously you get much less fiber per preform, but that's specialty, so that's... Yeah. And then if you look at telecom, these fibers are then made into cables and deployed with various methods, but that's the focus of many other pod episodes, I think.
I think that was a fantastic description, and I also, if you're working in this, then you maybe... you're aware about what a preform is and roughly how a cable is made, but I think it's really great to get that described, and also that if you have like 1 meter preform, it can get so many kilometers, and you keep the, how shall I say, the relative measurings, the core and the cladding, we keep the dimensions through this process. And as you said, we will probably cover in another episode then when you take all these fibers, you color them, you make them into a cable assembly, and all different cables that we actually are using and the characteristics and so on. But we will not talk about that today. We will only talk about the fiber. So the basic is that you have a cladding then, as you mentioned, and you have the core. And in these ones, or you can mix between these ones. And when you are doing a lot of research and trying out new ways, is it mostly the core that you are playing with, or isn't it? Or
well, that's a really broad and exciting question, of course. yeah. We can play with the core, absolutely. We can put other dopants in the core, or we can make the cores a lot higher doped, so we get nonlinearities or other fancy stuff, or we can make it put active materials in the core to make it react to magnetic fields and things like that. So there's a lot of things you can do in the core and the cladding. There's also a lot of things you can do on the coating. So talking about fiber optic sensing, for example, you can put sensitive coatings that will then induce changes in the optical light that you carry along the fiber. And there you have made yourself a sensor that can sense different properties along kilometers of distributed fibers. So there's a lot of fun things you can do using these fibers. In the telecom world, we want the fibers to be very low loss and very passive. Mm-hmm. In the sensor world, we don't want them to be passive. Mm. And while we're talking about fun things to do, I mean, I talked about the preform is a large version of a fiber. If you would drill some holes in that preform, you can keep those holes in the fiber. So you can make fibers that have tiny, tiny holes along the entire length of kilometers of fibers. So there's a lot of things you can do in the specialty fiber world, where I come from, really, in the daily.
Okay. I will ask you more about that. I actually... Time is flying, Åsa. I think that this is fantastic. Maybe it's too basic for yourself, but I'm sure a lot of the listeners really enjoy this and they don't really have this knowledge. So I think it's extremely, interesting to hear about. So now we are here with our Swedish fika, and today it's the fet tisdagen. It's the Swedish name of it. We are celebrating with a sort of a cake, like a bunny with cream in it. Do you want to describe? You can mention the name, Åsa. What are we eating here?
We're eating semla. So these are fantastic sweet buns, as you say that's. We eat in Sweden before Easter, so we have a weekly dose of these the weeks before Easter, and today is the first day that we're really allowed to eat them.
And people are crazy.
People are crazy.
Yeah, everyone wants to have the semla.
Yes, of course, of course.
Okay, enough said about the semla. Now, so I want to hear about you, Åsa. Who are you? We know now that you're a super expert into fiber and that you have the knowledge about everything around fiber. But who are you when you are not working with the fiber on your private time or free time?
Well, actually, a few years ago, I thought that, well, I have so much time. What should I do? So me and my sister, we started an e-commerce company. It was cool. Very different from what I do in my daily job, but also very fun. So it's a completely different world, selling things to business to consumer and web design and purchasing things all around the world and distributing it out to the customers all around Sweden. It's cool. Very different, very fun.
Did you start that one before the pandemic hit, or was it during the pandemic?
No, we started it before, so it's been around for a few years.
Okay, so did you notice that you got an increase of sales when people were bored sitting at home?
It's a good question. It's it's in the gardening niche, so absolutely people were out in the gardens and they were they needed to purchase some of our things more. In 2020 was a good year for us.
Okay. And since this is not like state or government media, you can mention the website name if you want to.
Well, it's Gecko Trädgård, it's called in Swedish. So it's
Gecko Trädgård. Yeah. Fantastic. Maybe we can add that link into... we will.
Thank you.
Great. Åsa, now we have to go back to work. Great. So now we are back after this semla and some good coffee. So and ready to work. So now we have had the basics. We talk about different fiber types and so on. But I thought we were talking about the most common fiber types. But if we are looking a bit onwards and about future fiber types. I read on, we also discussed it about this hollow core and ultra thin and so on. Can you please mention the different types that you are working on and that you see will come in the future?
Yeah, sure. And this is, of course, where it starts to get really interesting for me as a specialty fiber person.
Yep.
So in communications, although there are many, many cable designs, even Hexatronics has I don't know, probably 100 at least, cable designs. Yep. Depending on the number of fiber you need or where the fibers will be used, such as combined with coppers, etc. So what's inside is usually pretty much the same. So you have a few standardized types inside the communications fiber. But since there is an ever-increasing demand of higher capacity and higher bandwidths and more information through the systems, there is an ongoing development of fibers also in the communication world. So earlier the focus had been on the systems around the fibers, where the modulation formats and electrical systems can send and receive the information, etc. There were still developments to be done there, that there was still capacity enough to for the fiber to carry whatever you could push into it. Mm-hmm. But now, there is only so much one could do with existing fibers. So there is a lot of work now in the last several years in the telecom world to look at new generations of fiber for higher capacities, which is really exciting. I mean, it's a lot of cool research being done. And there's two main paths. One is to reduce the loss of the fiber and the latency, the loss and the latency in the fibers. So the latency is the delay of the signal. And here, we talked in the very beginning of our discussions, you said that the fibers are usually solid. And I said, well, there is a fundamentally different type of fiber that we call a hollow core fiber. That is, the waveguiding mechanism is completely different to standard fibers. But I won't go there now to really explain the mechanism, but rather say that in a normal fiber, the core is made of glass to transmit the light. Mm-hmm. And since the refractive index of the glass is higher than that of the air, it will slow the light down. Okay, so if you go into a higher refractive index, the speed of the light in that material will be slower than if you were in vacuum or in air. And the glass will also have attenuation.
So you skip the core and just have the cladding.
Exactly. In the hollow core fibers, you skip the core. Or rather, you have a core that is a void. So you transmit the light in a void, in a vacuum or in air or, or a gas or whatever you have in your fiber. And that means that in principle, there's no latency. There's no delay of the pulse compared to a fully free space signal. And the loss can also be very, very low. There's been publications showing extremely low loss in these fibers. But they are very difficult to produce and difficult to work with, these fibers. So they're not really relevant for general telecommunication work, but for really niche applications. These fibers are being used at the moment, but again, really niche applications. So real-time stock trading, for example, is one such application where microseconds or even tens of nanoseconds make a difference in the money they can make in these stock tradings. So these really ultra-low latency fibers are being used there.
They are used there now?
They are being used now, yes.
Cool.
So, and the other way to increase the capacity is to introduce more than one optical path in the fibers. You mentioned before the wavelength multiplexing, or division with WDM. There are other ways to make even more channels in the fiber. One is to simply put more cores in the fiber. So what we call a multi-core fiber. So there, you just introduce more cores in the cross-section of the fiber. So the cross-section of a fiber is normally 125 microns. As we know, you normally we have one tiny 10 micrometer core in that cross section. Let's put 7 cores in there instead. Then you have 7 times the capacity of that fiber. So that's a in theory, simple way of increasing the capacity even further. Also fairly difficult to work with, but you know, it's there's quite a lot of work being done that in the communication research groups around the world. And then another way to introduce another optical path in the fiber is to go with something that's called a few mode fiber, where a single mode fiber is carrying a single mode, one single mode, the fundamental optical mode of the fiber. These new fibers, the few mode fibers, you make the core slightly larger, and then that core can carry a few modes, three or five. And these modes can, if you do this right, they can propagate independent of each other along the fiber. So there, in one single core, you can carry maybe a few, 10 signals independent of each other. So these are three different types that are actually being researched on a lot in the communication research groups around the world. Really exciting fibers.
And the hollow ones, that you said that they were already in use. I didn't know that. So that was really cool.
Really niche used when we talk about communications. Yeah, they're also being used a lot in other fields, of course.
Okay.
So in say gas sensing, for example, you can co-propagate light with gases in these fibers, gases or liquids in these fibers. Mm-hmm. So for other applications, they're also very, very interesting.
So then you as you said, you almost reduce. You don't have any losses. It's like air in the space. It's no limitation at all.
Yes, I'm hesitating a bit because that's the theory. Yeah. It's groups have shown extremely low losses in these fibers, but they are not so easy to make, and you'll have other types of losses, scattering losses, and other losses that you would not have in a normal fiber.
So in the telecoms, it's a lot of talk for the moment about these huge fiber counts in the fibers, like fiber cables with a lot of thousands of fibers in it. And also you mentioned that you are also working with thinner fibers to make the cable construction itself thinner, but you can carry all these thousands of fiber. And in our industry, we think it's quite innovative talking about the 200 micron, maybe 180 micron. But you also, I know that you're also working with other types of these ultra-thin fibers.
Yes, absolutely. It's again, I come from another world, which is not really telecom, not really these 1,000 fibers in one cable, but rather specialty fibers and specialty applications. So we are actually making fibers all the way. So a normal fiber is 125 micrometers thick, the glass, with a coating normally 250. In the telecom world, now you're moving more and more to 200 micron on the coating to be able to pack more fibers into one cable, as you said. Maybe 180 is also coming. We make fibers that are 25 microns thick, so a fifth of a normal fiber in the glass.
Oh.
And that's really thin.
Yeah.
When you don't, when you draw that fiber, you don't see it. Mm-hmm. If you blow on it, it floats away in the air. It's really nightmare to work with. But in some applications, they're really, really amazing. If you really need something tiny, you have a tiny catheter, for example, you can't really make it bigger. Well, that's a use case. If you pull them, you can pull them really, really fast because there's no really mechanical resistance in them. You can embed them in composites because their size is comparable to the carbon or glass fibers in the composites. So there's a lot of use cases for those. I don't really see them in that thin in telecom cables anywhere anytime soon because they're difficult to contact.
I think that this will be my last question if you don't have anything more to add. So the sensing seems to be really interesting and something that's coming up. I heard that it's used a lot and it has improved the production of steel, for example, and a lot of other different use cases. And then you mentioned earlier about this ultra-thin fiber, and you touched upon that it's used in healthcare. But and do you have any other areas of where we are using, or where the fiber will be used in the future?
Yeah, it's. I mean, we see fiber optic sensing, as you mentioned, and fiber optic components in general, really taking their place in a lot of different industrial sectors at the moment, and this will continue to grow, I'm sure, a lot for the next decade. And it's both industrial sensing, as you say, steel industry is starting to work with using these sensors in production. Medical area has always been large in fiber optics, but also a lot of sensing going in there. Lasers, of course, there's both fiber lasers and fibers being carrying very, very high powers. So there's a lot of different applications of fiber optics that is non-telecom that are growing and will continue to grow a lot, I believe, in the next decade.
So maybe we can invite you to another episode in the future, and then we can discuss all these other areas, because I'm sure that many of the listeners, they are not only into telecoms, but I also want to hear about these other parts.
I'd be delighted to come back.
Thank you. So I think that we had so much interesting and good information from you, and so I think that we are happy with that for today. Thank you very much also for coming and visiting us and for telling all this to us.
Thank you a lot, Magnus.
Thank you.